We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, RotoViz radio listener. This is Curtis Patrick from the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and I've got a special deal for you today. Go to RotoViz.com. Click the subscribe button, put the 12-month subscription in your cart, and use promo code RVRadio2021. That's RVRadio2021. And you're going to save 10%. Taking advantage of this deal, getting your hands on what's included in the package is the best way to enhance your performance this year. So go to RotoViz.com and subscribe now.
Mahomes has the time, delivers perfectly downfield, touchdown, Patrick Mahomes with a rope.
This one, Adams, touchdown. This time going deep for Beckham Jr.
Hello and welcome back to RotoViz Overtime on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by Blue Wire. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host here, Sean Siegel. Hopefully, Sean, the listeners did tune in earlier this week when we had two shows so far. The second show, John Daigle jumped on. A lot of fun talking to him about the upcoming season, some of the rookies and so on. Some basketball conversation in there. So if you haven't checked that out, check it out after you listen to this one. But we're going to have a fun show today. We're going to dive into a number of different articles up on rotoviz.com and share some of the work of some of the other writers up on the website. So it should be a fun one.
Yeah, John was fantastic. We really appreciate him coming on the show, helping out with some of the draft content before the draft and getting his thoughts on how that panned out, getting his ideas on some of the top guys that you have to have for your 2021 teams in a couple of different formats. So we appreciate that. That was, again, that was a blast. Today, we're going to be looking at some of the top running backs and some of the top late round tight ends. So a couple of different positions for you here and multiple guys. Zachary Kruger, he's done a fantastic job with you on the best ball show, sort of an evergreen series there that really teaches you how to play best ball. Best ball, one of those formats that is actually very, very beatable, right? So as long as you have the right tools, we've got some fantastic options on RotoViz. If you have the right strategies, with which Colm and Zach have been helping you with, you can make money on best ball. You want to make sure that you have a little bit of player diversity. You're not relying exclusively on two or three guys who get hurt and take down your season. But best ball, an area where if you know what you're doing, you will make some money. These guys have done a great job with it. We're going to talk about one of Zach's other articles today, looking at six second-year running backs and sort of the head versus heart argument. Now, these guys, with the exception of Taylor, who is going in that round one range, we think that he's a star. There is a little bit of, I wouldn't say red flags, but it's always possible that he doesn't become the next, you know, 102, 103 in 2022 like we believe that he will. The rest of the guys are in that borderline end of the second or in the running back dead zone, which we know can be a very controversial, tricky range. It can be the range that really takes apart your team. So are they going to be good values? Are they guys you want to avoid like the plague? Are they landmines for you? We'll go through some of that. And then we all know the situation where you want to get the elite tight end, and then somebody else drafts Waller, Kittle ahead of you in the second round. Or if you're in a format where maybe they drop a little bit later, you're taking a little bit of risk, they take them before you in the third round, and suddenly you're sitting there thinking, okay, well, you know, now it's a long way until I actually have any guys. Maybe you're sitting on Hockenson, maybe you're sitting on Fant, maybe you expect an Andrews bounce back. But again, you let them fall a little bit. You're like, I'm going to get a good value. Somebody reaches for them in that draft. And now you're suddenly very clearly into this second tight end window that we talk about, where you need to get three guys and you need to get them relatively late. Well, Neil is our tight end guru. He's got the guys for you. We'll be discussing who you need to pick there and if Colm and I see any particular players we like from that section.
Before we dive into that, I did mention it on the show so far this week. I want to mention it again. We have a Scott Fish Bowl 11 contest. You can win yourself an entry into this year's Scott Fish Bowl. It's going to be all over your Twitter feed. It's going to be all over every podcast you listen to for a couple of weeks, you know, probably about a month from now. But if you want to get entry and you haven't already, drop us a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app and also give a retweet to the tweet on my Twitter feed in relation to it. I will be sharing it over the coming week, and that winner will be announced on the shows next week, either Tuesday or Thursday. Don't miss out. Quite simple to enter. Thanks to everyone who has entered so far. Much appreciated, and best luck to all involved. So jumping into the first piece that Sean mentioned a moment ago, it is from Zach Kruger, and I guess I'll take a chance to plug the Best Baseball Show. We have been running it over the last good few weeks now on RotoViz Radio, but we have also set up a kind of a podcast directory page on rotoviz.com, so I will be tweeting that out as well, where we don't have a specific feed for the baseball podcast, but we do have one kind of go-to place so you can listen to all those episodes. We're up to 5 or 6 released now. We have recorded 9 so far. We're hoping to have 15 episodes in the series, and Zach's doing a phenomenal job through that. So I would highly recommend checking that out if you're interested. If you're new to baseball or if you're a seasoned vet, there'll be something in there for yourself. But when we look through his recent piece, Head Versus Heart, in terms of the second year running backs to make or break your baseball team, I think Sean will probably be very quick on this first guy, Jonathan Taylor. His current ADP is around the 6th spot, running back 6. I think he's, for me, if you're going for that, you know, single elite running back or modified 0 RB, whatever way you want to look at it, I think Taylor is that final one for me, but I think I would probably have him as high as RB4 when I'd be setting it up for that. I don't know if you're as strong as me on putting him that high, but I know he's somebody that you do like.
Yeah, and Taylor is an interesting player because, I mean, he hit 100 in the running back prospect lab, right? He was really the best running back talent, with the possible exception of Saquon Barkley, that we've had in a long time. Some of this is going back and say, oh, okay, well, you see how these guys have played. But if you look at the prospect lab and you look at the athleticism and the profile, you're really looking at Jonathan Taylor and Christian McCaffrey, I think, as the two guys in the last decade that were such no-brain, home run guys who could have this monster type of career. McCaffrey has done that. Taylor now in the situation where you have Carson Wentz. And I think that really is the article here, and the way that Zach has put this together is the head versus the heart, and what the heart is telling you and what the head is telling you. For me, the only thing that really is knocking it down is the fact that Carson Wentz was so bad last year that I think that we have to consider that he's going to be bad again, right? I mean, we don't necessarily have a ton of situations in which these quarterbacks melt down and then come back and are very solid types of players. It's just a very difficult thing to do. If the offense doesn't work, then it's going to be harder for Taylor. Phillip Rivers, not an elite quarterback last year. Taylor is still successful, but there's a difference between Phillip Rivers, who does some of the check down types of things that really help. For example, last season, Hines, 77 targets, a good score in his own right as a standalone player. I don't think that we're going to get that with Carson Wentz in the same way. We're going to have Jonathan Taylor really take this over. Now, you look at how Taylor finished last season, where 5 RB1 performances in his last 6 games, and even the one that wasn't was a 19.5 game. So that was a week where there was a lot of high scoring at the running back position. You look at how he finished, 22.5, 30.5, 19.5, 19.4, 38.4, right? That's what we're looking for from this guy, where you have the high value touches, you're going to get some receiving, you're going to get some touchdowns, but also the ability at any time to break off a reception or a run for 50 yards and a score. One of the things about the testing that Taylor did was say, look, these long scores that we got in college, they're going to still happen at the NFL level. They're going to still happen in the way that we got them from a Chris Johnson. And unlike Chris Johnson, Taylor brings some other things to the table as well. So I think you have to look at him as this guy that once Christian McCaffrey is gone. He gets into the mix because when you're looking at Dalvin Cook and you're looking at Jonathan Taylor, you see a lot of the same things with Taylor being younger and more athletic. So again, we do have some concerns. We have Hines, we have Wentz, but I don't think that we can go wrong taking Taylor there, knowing that maybe the upside isn't quite the same because your offense isn't going to be this juggernaut. Now, second guy, Cam Akers, he's an interesting player because even though he was weaker than some of these other rookie running backs last year until the very end, he's the one that people like. So, Colin, how much of it is the heart when we're looking at, okay, well, Matthew Stafford is going to come in, this offense is going to score a lot more points. The Rams seem very much like Akers were their guy down the stretch, but you had the struggles that he had in the first half. You have some collegiate, some athletic testing types of things suggesting that he's a good, not great prospect. And then you have someone like Henderson who is still going to get some snaps, could still take away some important touches, and is the threat actually to play well enough at times to start to carve into the workload?
I'm all about Henderson here. There's very little chance that Cam Akers is going to be like my, I would guess at this moment in time, my exposure to Cam Akers this season is going to be 0%. And I think that Darrell Henderson is the player to target just based on what we've seen so far. We've seen a few flashes from Cam Akers, but I haven't seen enough that I'm going to be drafting him at his current slot. And if we get into week six, week seven, and Darrell Henderson is, you know, leading that backfield again, I won't be overly surprised. So I would much rather take the lower cost of opportunity and go for Henderson there. It's pretty clear cut for me. But there is obviously a lot of buzz around Akers, but Henderson's the running back there to be buying for myself. Next up is DeAndre Swift. Came on pretty strong throughout the season last year. You know, we were kind of waiting with Adrian Peterson in there trying to keep him out, but RB14 in terms of ADP around the 19th pick. You know, he's going close to that back end of the first round early, or back end of the second round, early third round. What's your thoughts there on the Lions? I know you touched on the situation with the offense and the quarterback, you know, when we're looking at Jonathan Taylor, but DeAndre Swift, there's a large amount of question marks around that offense in general.
Yeah, so, and it's interesting, John on Thursday's show, he was absolutely fantastic. He mentioned Swift as the guy that he would actually place into the running back dead zone. And you look at Swift, and he's someone who, despite the way that he pops on individual plays and looks like this player who should be a star, both in college and as a rookie with the Lions, and now as we look to the second season with the Lions, there seem like there are situations in which the team doesn't want to fully commit to him. And then you pull up the workout explorer and you look at some of his closest comps. You've got Kerryon Johnson, you've got Miles Sanders, you've got Eddie Lacy, you've got Sony Michel. And we shouldn't look at those guys and say, oh, well, this is a huge red flag, simply because those players all came into year two flying high and then things changed in a hurry. A little bit of that is fluky. But it does factor in then to this idea that the Lions have really been mentioning that they like Jamal Williams and think that he's going to be the guy who soaks up a lot of the key touches. Then you look at Jared Goff instead of Matthew Stafford, and you're thinking, okay, well, this offense isn't going to score a lot of points. And now we're in a situation with the players that they have in there. Even someone like a Jamar Jefferson, I think, makes this backfield deep enough that we have to be a little bit concerned that the overall touches are not going to live up to this ADP.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, no, I very much agree with that. And on Thursday's show as well, another player that was mentioned on that was Aaron Jones. He kind of fits into the next player, and that's when we're looking at Jamal Williams. And we do touch on that a little bit on Thursday's show, so I think we'll move on beyond that. But another player that came up, Sean, that we didn't dive into as much was Antonio Gibson for Washington, RB15, just short of the 21 spot in ADP. Did have some really strong games in the midpoint of last season, tailed off towards the end. JD McKissick is the head pick out of the two of them in terms of, especially when you're looking at PPR points and things like that. How are you feeling about that Washington backfield?
Yeah, so you have Antonio Gibson here, and I like what Zach has written. It seems like half of the fantasy industry was completely on board with Gibson, and I like what Zach has written here. He says it seems like half of the fantasy industry was completely on board with Gibson and his elite athleticism. Well, the other half wanted to wait and see if he could make the transition. The interesting thing is that he made the transition as a runner, not necessarily as a receiver, but then it looked like in week 12 that was going to happen. He scores 36 points, immediately gets hurt at the beginning of week 13. You look at week 7 to week 12, five consecutive running back one finishes. Gibson's the guy that doesn't really seem to fit within the rest of this group ADP-wise, right? He's being valued as though he has the same sorts of red flags or the same offensive concerns that the other guys do. And I think the only red flag he has is just that he didn't come into the NFL quite as clear-cut in terms of a prospect. You know, Zach's note on him is that it's actually hard to poke holes in Gibson at his current price given his team situation. So when he talks about the heart versus the head, he's saying here that the head also looks awfully good for Gibson. I think that he's the guy that you want to have a lot of ownership of. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't ways that it could still backfire. JD McKissick proved himself as a very good dump-off target last season, but as this offense develops this year, I mean, we could be talking about Antonio Gibson as a top-5 pick in the 2022 draft. I don't think that's the case for the rest of the guys. Now, John's highest ownership, he said, was in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I still have a hard time with this because, for me, it always comes back to the fact that the Chiefs could have drafted Jonathan Taylor, and then you have Patrick Mahomes, Taylor, Hill, Kelsey, and you have this all-time great offense. Edwards-Helaire, a small guy who doesn't have a lot of straight-line speed, so then we're talking about more scouting-oriented things about how good is he as a pass catcher? Can he make these guys miss in the backfield? You know, can he break those big plays despite not having the long speed? And that's one of the things when I look at the agility versus the long speed for some of these players. Now, we have Edwards-Helaire as an athletic comp to Aaron Jones. Jones has been able to do that at the NFL level. We had week one last season where Edwards-Helaire looked like he was going to be able to do a little bit of that, and that never really came to fruition, perhaps because of nagging injuries, perhaps because of the learning curve. Is Edwards-Helaire going to be that guy? We know the Chiefs have worked very hard to improve their offensive line, and we know that beyond Hill and Kelsey, they still have a lot of guys to throw the ball to. So Mahomes has been somewhat reticent, especially in non-designed plays, to dump the ball off to running backs. Are we going to see more of these sort of garbagey type of touches that are still so valuable for players, especially players like Edwards-Helaire, who's never going to be a superstar just purely as a runner? He needs those touches to be a value in this area.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting, you know, with Mahomes that gets overlooked is, you know, there is a lot of those, you know, 8 to 10 yard scrambles that he does in terms of a lot of quarterbacks you touched on earlier, the likes of Phillip Rivers, that's not possible. So he's dumping those off to the running back. Tom Brady's not really doing that. He's dumping it off to the running back, whereas Edwards-Helaire is not going to get those, you know, simple points that you can just accumulate, you know, with 20 to 30 receptions like that throughout the season. So he's missing out on that. The upside of Edwards-Helaire for me is the Chiefs get to the goal line a lot. They score a lot of points. Do we see a situation where he's getting those goal line carries and being able to punch it in? We haven't really seen that with him so far in his time in the Chiefs. And with the Chiefs and how explosive that offense is, often it's either going to the red zone very quickly and we're not getting the running back involved, or else it's we're in 10 yards from the line, from the goal line, and we're going to Travis Kelce. So I just have too many red flags around Edwards-Helaire. And where the kind of speculation went last year when the draft pick came in, how much hype was around him, it didn't work out. They did give him a lot of opportunities early in the season. I just think there's too many red flags there for me to be buying. And again, like a lot of these players, they're going in a range where we're looking at the other available options in that, you know, 20 to 25 ADP range, and we're going for those options instead. So for me, I would be passing here again. The next one up, and I've always said that J.K. Dobbins was a player for 2021. Gus Edwards getting a contract extension, more money than I would have anticipated happening. Somebody who does have good metrics in terms of what he's been able to put up when he's been given the opportunity. That's Gus Edwards I'm talking about. So what is your thoughts here on how that backfield shakes out? I know that you do have quite a bit of J.K. Dobbins drafted.
It's weird because I never understood why the Ravens committed really anything but what they did to Mark Ingram when they had Gus Edwards, who appeared to be the better player. And now it's a bizarre situation where it's hard to understand why they seem to be making such a commitment to Edwards when they have Dobbins, and perhaps this is just the fact that I would love to get a little bit of value out of someone that I thought was going to play a little bigger role when he came in, and that's Justice Hill. But they're talking uphill, right? And so where does Edwards really fit in when you have Dobbins and Hill as two of the more explosive players in the NFL? And at the same time, with the commitment that they're making to Edwards and the number of carries there are going to be in this offense, then you could certainly see Edwards as a guy who is a legitimate zero running back candidate. He was one of Denny's guys when he was on the show a couple weeks ago. I like Dobbins here, even though I think one of the concerns that you have, and one of the concerns that I really have for all of these guys, except for Gibson, and then perhaps Akers, who is being drafted a little bit more like it, is just what is the extreme upside? Because anytime that we're drafting running backs in the first three rounds, they need to not just have upside and to have a path to being a decent scorer, they need to have extreme upside. The Ravens offense would need to change a little bit to get there. Now, if we talk about extreme upside, there are some different ways to accomplish it. Derrick Henry has accomplished it by getting a huge number of carries, scoring touchdowns, and then breaking enough big plays on those carries that he's able to do it mostly just as a rusher. Now, when you're talking about drafting people in the first round, does he have the upside of a top four or five pick? Probably no. Does he have the upside if you were taking him in round three? Then the answer would be yes. Maybe Dobbins can be that kind of guy, even when he's splitting carries, because this Ravens offense is going to have so many rushing touches and Dobbins is going to be so explosive. When we look at what he did last year, the first 10 weeks, only two games in which he had a running back two or better finish, and none of those were running back one finishes. Over the last 6 weeks, they were all RB2 or better finishes with two RB1 finishes, and the potential for that this coming season to really shift to where he is mostly a high-end RB2 with explosive weeks of 25 to 35 points filtering in there, then I think this is a range where you can do that. The fact that there are enough interesting second-year players to move Dobbins to the back of this group, I think makes him still interesting, where if he were at the front of this group, as he would be in a lot of years, then you're looking a little bit more risk than upside. So even though I think he's actually a little bit more one of these guys who you might want in Dynasty, he doesn't exactly fit a redraft construction. I don't think he's necessarily going to lose the league for you. And he's in this group that makes the third round pretty interesting, to where, unlike in most years, I could see a draft approach where we go running back in round one, if you get one of the elite guys, then a star wide receiver in round two, then Dobbins, and now wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver after that. Now, the question there is, where do you get one of those elite tight ends? So it all comes back to the fact that any decision that you make is going to influence the rest of your construction somewhere else. But this is an interesting group. The guys I like out of this group at the cost are going to be Gibson and Dobbins.
So moving to the tight ends portion now, we're looking at a piece from Neil Dutton in terms of some late round targets for tight ends and best ball drafts. And obviously we've talked about, you know, the elite options. We have Kelce, Kittle, and Waller. Then you have the likes of Mark Andrews, Hockenson, and Kyle Pitts in there. But we start to dive a little bit deeper. Maybe you miss out on one of those elite guys, or maybe you get one of those guys like a Hockenson, but you're seeing who you can pair them up with. A few interesting candidates here, Sean. I'll go through the to start things off, I'll jump through the names involved, and then we'll see which ones we want to highlight the most. We have Evan Ingram of the Giants. We have Adam Troutman. We have Blake Jarwin, Anthony Firkser, and Dawson Knox. So some guys in there that, you know, have been at the higher end before, and the likes of an Evan Ingram. He's probably the one that feels most out of place based on what we would have expected from him in the past, but things haven't really worked out. Then we have some guys that are going in those later areas, and somebody like Firkser, who with the Titans, you know, there was opportunity there, but maybe now with the change in Julio Jones coming in, maybe that takes a little bit away from him. Any of those guys that are really piquing your interest during draft season here?
Well, Ingram is the player who still just jumps out as this potentially sexy pick where, you know, he could be a league winner for you. We look at what happened last season. Now, granted, they added targets in terms of Kenny Galladay, Kadarius Toney. You're going to have Saquon Barkley back. This is a guy who is fourth in targets at the position, fifth in receptions, sixth in air yards, fifth in expected points per game. So you have the volume. The problem is he was 35th in touchdowns, and he was 25th in translating air yards into actual yards, which those two things combined pushed him down to 136th in terms of fantasy points over expectation per game. So he was a disaster from an efficiency perspective. And one of the things that we've learned about Ingram as he's now progressed through the early portions of his career is that he can get open, but he has trouble catching the ball, and he has trouble with this quarterback receiver connection, right? So without the rapport with the QB, those are some red flags. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, Daniel Jones played really poorly last season. I think there's some fairness to that, but one of the cool things that we saw in an article written for the site by Madison Parkhill is that Daniel Jones actually had some pretty intriguing peripherals. And so that sort of pushes this back onto Ingram. But one of the things that I think can happen and sometimes gets overlooked is that you have an athletic player who can get open and is a receiving threat at the tight end position, a pretty clear receiver, then sometimes adding some other good options actually frees him up, right? So the defense now going to be focusing on Galladay, going to be looking for those gimmick plays for Toney underneath. They're going to have to concentrate on Saquon Barkley, something they didn't have to do last year. Suddenly, Ingram goes from a focal point of the defense to a complete afterthought. Maybe that will allow him to start creating the breakout plays, get some of the confidence back, develop that rapport with Jones, and you have a season where he bounces back and becomes a core tight end for the following year. Now, we contrast that with Adam Troutman, who was a very old player coming into the NFL. So he's like a lot of these tight ends, actually, who are a little bit trendy, where he's older than you think that he would be, and maybe also not that athletic. So he's older, he's not that athletic, he comes from a small school, he's not going to get to play with Drew Brees, and at the same time, he was very good. He does have some good agility for someone his size. He's someone who could be a full-time player. What are your thoughts here on how this will work in a New Orleans Saints passing offense that has a lot of question marks outside of Michael Thomas? Traquan Smith, somebody who has been getting a lot of puff pieces really generated by the team, saying he could break out this season. He'll be a better fit with these other quarterbacks than he was with Drew Brees. I think when you have a guy being pushed as a potential breakout because Drew Brees isn't going to be the quarterback, that raises some eyebrows. Now, I like Traquan. I still own quite a bit of Traquan. I hope it's true, but I think that also sort of underlines what the opportunity is in this offense.
Yeah, there's just so many question marks around the offense in general. We don't even know if it's Jameis, if it's Taysom, and how things work out there. So it could all work out, and the situation could come together in the perfect storm. But even when you mentioned some of the wide receiving options that there is there, there's just so much going on that it's probably a situation that I'm not going to be that heavily invested in. I do have Troutman in some dynasty leagues, but I'm not expecting major things from him heading forward this season. Somebody though who didn't make the list, I know we're talking about this list, but somebody who has come up on shows before that's going in that similar sort of range, with the Chicago Bears, and that is Cole Kmet. I think that he's somebody I think I would be slotting into this list, if I was giving Mr. Dutton any players to add into it. But out of those guys that remain, any of the rest of them that are piquing your interest, Sean?
Well, Blake Jarwin was Denny's pick in the NFL 10 of Death. I mentioned that in the full 20 round breakdown that came out at the end of the week last week. Dalton Schultz is probably my guy there. So maybe it's just that I own a lot of him as the season developed last season. I think that he played well enough, especially when you consider that he also didn't have Dak Prescott for most of the year, that's going to be a committee. It's interesting to think that a committee of tight ends in a passing attack that also has Cooper, Lamb, and Gallup could be valuable at all. But again, we have Dak Prescott here. I think I would still take the less expensive of the two. You can get Schultz in the last round, even in very deep best ball formats. So a potential there. And then we see the tight end in Tennessee. I think that's probably not as intriguing now that they have Julio Jones. Colin, what are your thoughts on Dawson Knox? We have this explosive Bills passing attack that has Stephon Diggs, and then it has a cast of characters that could be interchangeable. We could have a breakout from Gabriel Davis. I really like his possibility there this year, but they've been looking for a tight end. They didn't fill the tight end position, and Knox, one of those guys who could be a touchdown scorer late for you in best ball. There were even some articles coming out recently about how he's working on some different eye exercises to make sure he doesn't drop those touchdown passes. Not enough volume for you here, even late, or do you like the touchdown potential when you're talking about a last round pick?
He's somebody who it's going to, in my opinion, it's going to be like end zone or bust, but there's a lot of tight ends in the NFL that when we're looking at fantasy perspective is touchdowns are what's going to drive them. Getting a tight end who's going to give you those double-digit points even to get you through those bye weeks can be all the difference. So I think at the current ADP, I think it's well worth taking a couple of dart throws at it. I have him on a couple of rosters so far this offseason. And if we look at when he was healthy last year, and Neil points this out in the article, he had 10.2% off the targets in the games that he did play. Now, he obviously was injured in some of the other games, but he plays with somebody in Josh Allen who likes to scramble when we get into the red zone. There was quite a few of his touchdowns that were pretty improvised at the end of things. So I think that there's no downside to the pick. Like, we're picking at a spot where zero is the downside, and I think there's enough upside there to get you through a couple of weeks. I don't think we're going to be looking at him as the next overall breakout tight end, but I think there's enough there to warrant picking them up at the back end of those best ball rosters.
Yeah, definitely. And make sure you check out all Neil's work at the tight end position. If you're looking to put together your team at tight ends, he covers our rookies for us. He covers these late guys. He has a full strategy for you at the tight end position. We know that we need to hit elite guys, but not everybody can have those top three, right? 9 of the 12 teams are not going to have a member of the big three. Make sure you check out Neil for how he can help you put together the rest of your roster at tight end. Colin, before we let people go today, we've had three very full shows this week. We've had full shows the last couple of weeks. We haven't been able to get as many of our recommendations. As I've been having some interactions with listeners, I've gotten some great ideas for books and TV shows. I did want to mention, we talked about the Chronicles of Priden recently with one of our listeners who gave us the great review there with the assistant pig keeper. I was recommended a fantasy series. For those of you who have watched or read Game of Thrones and are looking for something, this was the First Law series. It was kind of interesting. Joe Abercrombie, the author, I had read something else by him but hadn't actually read his signature work. I read the first half of the book, was kind of struggling through it. The characters weren't that likable. And then everything flipped. The second half was fantastic. And now I'm sitting around every day trying to figure out why the library is making me wait a month to get the second one, trying to find the ebook, trying to get an actual physical copy out there. So really appreciate that recommendation. We also had a TV recommendation that I did want to mention because I love the foreign shows. I love the active shows. I think that a lot of times we talk about character-based product or plot-based product. I think the characters are often a lot more interesting in the plot-based shows or the ones that have a good mix. We had The Bureau recommended, which is a French political thriller. Anything set in a foreign country is always just a good watch, a good read, because it broadens your experience and it puts you in an environment that you're not as used to. It adds that other element where the setting can be a character for you. So I encourage people to check those out. I'm going to be making a second pass through that. The Bureau is actually a little bit like the first Lost series, where I had watched the pilot 5-6 years ago, hadn't cared for it, but with this recommendation from one of our listeners, I'm going to make sure I give that another chance. Looking for a lot of shows here as we continue to burn through all the content coming off of the pandemic, and even with 2021 really looking up, so many positives out there right now. Still, TV shows, books, let us know what we should be partaking from.
As always, you can get a 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass up on the website. All you have to do is add the code RVRadio2021 at checkout, or go to rotoviz.com/podcast for further information. That's going to bring us to the end of the episode today. As always, do drop us that written on your favorite podcast app. And of course, that'll also help gain you entry into the Scott Fishbowl draw that we will have next week. Give a retweet of that tweet as well on my Twitter feed, which is at Overtime Ireland. If you do have any content you want to see up on the RotoViz Overtime podcast over the next couple of weeks, send it my way on Twitter or at rotovizradio@gmail.com by email. We'll use some of the best of those on our upcoming shows. As always, my co-host is Sean Siegel. Check out Sean's great work up on rotoviz.com. Lots of great content over the last
Thank
few
you
weeks.
Thank you for listening to Overtime and RotoViz Radio.
Until we're back next week,
podcast on iTunes, have a good one. Your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at rotovizradio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.